You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, Houston Rockets. On that note, this is Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. After a nine-day layoff, the Rockets got back in action with their first game after the All-Star break on Friday night at home against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And what a showing it was. 120-102 winners the Rockets were, improving to 45-13 on the year, winning streak now at 11 games. The Timberwolves fall to 36-26. And this was a game the Rockets were actually down six with under 2 minutes to go until halftime. So they actually outscored the Timberwolves by 24 over the final 25-plus minutes of the game, somewhat reminiscent of how they flipped the last game less than 2 weeks ago, the Tuesday before the All-Star break, which happened in Minnesota when the Rockets were down 13 in the first half, ended up winning by 18. This is such an impressive win for the Rockets because, folks, to beat Minnesota, this is a team, I know the Rockets have played them well, but they entered tonight 36-25, the number four seed in the West, effectively tied with the Spurs, the number three seed, and you could argue maybe the number three favorite considering the Spurs' ongoing injury concerns with Kawhi Leonard, and the Rockets blitzed them. They have now beaten the Timberwolves three times within the past 5 weeks. None of them have even been close, the last two by 18 points. This is just domination by the Rockets, and what's most impressive about the way they did it on Friday night, it wasn't even like their best guys played especially well. James Harden led the team in scoring, 31 points, 9 assists, but he did it on 8 of 24 from the field. Maybe there was a little bit of rust there. Chris Paul ended up with a very strong game, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, but a lot of the points and rebounds came late. He finished 5 of 11 from the field, started 2 of 7, so eventually those guys got going. But for the first three quarters, it wasn't like James or Chris Paul, either of your stars, was particularly dominant. But the Rockets succeeded anyway, in large part because of how much depth they have. You could certainly see a big difference between the two teams there. And then Clint Capella on the inside, 25 points, 11 rebounds, 10 of 11 shooting against Karl-Anthony Towns. That's just a massive, massive showing against, again, Karl-Anthony Towns. He had 18 and 13, so it wasn't a bad night for Karl-Anthony Towns, but he did it on just 6 of 15 shooting. Clint made him work, and then on the other end, folks, he made the Timberwolves pay for that switching defense. That's all we've said in the past. Karl-Anthony Towns is a phenomenal talent, but can you at least make him work? And Clint Capella has done that and then some in these three matchups, and it's a sign, I believe, of Clint's evolution as a big man, that you're not seeing him fade from these types of mono-on-mono showings. He seems to be relishing that competition, and if anything, he seems to be really frustrating some of these younger bigs like Karl-Anthony Towns, like Boogie Cousins before his injury. Not only is Clint having success, but he's having so much success that you're actually seeing the opposition on a number of occasions actually whine to the officials regularly, asking for calls, looking at their teammates, shrugging their shoulders. That's a sign that you're not getting into the game to the extent that you expect to. So to see Clint have that kind of success against the NBA's better young bigs, that's a really encouraging sign. We've seen it before, but tonight, again, 10 of 11, 25 and 11 as far as points and rebounds, but the efficiency, they needed it because the Rockets, we mentioned James Harden just 8 of 24 from the field. There's always going to be a little bit of rust coming off a long layoff like this. The rest is nice, but it's a fine line between that and rust. And I think James, now to James's credit, he did have 9 assists, also got to the free throw line 12 times and made all 12. So he was still very good, 31-9, because he controlled what he could control. But in terms of the shooting, it wasn't a banner night for the Rockets. They ended up finishing 14 of 38, which is almost 37% from three, and that's sort of an average night, and it took a hot stretch in the fourth quarter just to get there. By and large, the Rockets did not shoot the ball well in this game. That's how the Timberwolves got up in the first quarter and were up by six as late as a minute 46 before the halftime buzzer. And yet the Rockets, they just found a way to grind this game. That's what was so impressive. And again, I think it starts with Clint Capella, because say what you will about James Harden and Chris Paul. Yes, they set up a lot of those opportunities, 17 assists between James Harden and Chris Paul combined. Certainly they got Clint some quality looks. But then to see Clint actually convert at that high of a level to frustrate Karl-Anthony Towns the way he did, one of the league's better big men, it's a very impressive showing, and I think it's a very important one because, as we mentioned, the Timberwolves, again, 36-26, it's a good team, but also when you factor in the Kawhi Leonard injury, it's pretty likely, I think, that you see them in the playoffs before you play the Warriors. Now, we have to wait and see what happens with Jimmy Butler. He's still getting checked out as I'm recording this podcast right after the game. He went down late in the third quarter. Wish the best for him. Now, that could certainly change the Minnesota outlook if that ends up being a long-term injury. You have to wait and see on that front. But ultimately, that didn't decide this game. The Timberwolves were already down 14 points by the time Jimmy Butler went out. So the fluke non-contact injury there, that didn't have a lot to do with it. It could impact their long-term outlook. We'll have to wait and see what the testing shows there. But the bottom line is Minnesota with Butler, Karl-Anthony Towns, this is one of the better young teams in the game as far as the contenders in the Western Conference, if they're healthy. And until I hear for sure that Jimmy Butler is out, I'm going to assume that he's going to be able to come back. And if that's the case, then folks, against a Spurs team that has no timetable for Kawhi Leonard's return, and according to Greg Popovich, may be preparing for life without him this year, when you look at the inconsistency of the Oklahoma City Thunder, when you look at the four teams below them that just have a certain lack of star power, there's a good shot that the Timberwolves, be it in the 4-5 or if they're able to get the 3, there's enough high-end talent there to where you're likely to play them. So to beat them 3 times, all convincingly, and to actually neutralize what is their biggest strength, Karl-Anthony Towns, with Clint Capella playing just as good or even better, folks, that's incredible, because then you can throw James Harden and Chris Paul into the mix, and at that point, it gets out of control very quickly. So, yes, the Rockets appear to be a favorable matchup, or the Timberwolves should be appear to be a favorable matchup for the Rockets, I should say, but I don't think we should take that for granted, because the Timberwolves are a very talented and a very good team, and I think the fact that the Timberwolves appear to be a good matchup, it's less about maybe just how the teams stack up 5-on-5, and more about just how good the Rockets are, that even a team that's been in the 3 or 4 seed in the Western Conference all year has now played them 3 times in 5 weeks and has not even been close in any of them, despite in the last 2 getting off to a pretty sizable lead in the first half. That's how good these Rockets are. And even on a night when James Harden and Chris Paul weren't at their best, when you have Clint Capella, 25-11 on 10-11 shooting on the interior against Karl-Anthony Towns, folks, if you can neutralize or even best Minnesota with their biggest gun, their most talented player, then folks, the Rockets, led by James Harden and Chris Paul, they're eventually going to be fine. Now, Clint Capella, I would say, was the headliner in this game because of certainly the one-on-one individual matchup, but I don't want to go any further without discussing the contributions of the bench. Now, some of the individual stat lines are not going to be that impressive. Ryan Anderson finished 2 of 8, even though he made a couple of his initial threes. Actually, had 1 3 in the fourth quarter that could have made it a laugher that somehow went all the way down and popped out. But Ryan, 2 of 8, 2 of 6 from 3. Luke Bamute had 1 point, 0 of 2 from the field. Gerald Green played just 6 minutes, 1 of 3. Now, Joe Johnson was 4 of 6, had 10 points and 3 boards. Nene made both of his 2 shots in 16 minutes off the bench, 7 points, 3 boards. So between Nene and Joe Johnson, you did have 6 of 8 from the field. That's 75% shooting. But more importantly than any individual stat line, look at the plus minuses off the bench. Brian Anderson, plus 13. Luke Bamute, plus 11. Nene, plus 14. Joe Johnson, plus 9. Of your 4 bench players that played 16 minutes or more, they all had plus minuses of positive 9 or better. That's how valuable the bench, was for you tonight. Even on a night when, as we mentioned, there's going to be a lot written about James Harden leading the way in points and assists, 31-9. Chris Paul almost having the triple-double, 14-10-8. Clint Capella, 25-11. The bench was huge, and they were a big part of how the Rockets in the first half were able to sort of stay within striking distance because they were not making shots early. There was a little bit of rust, and this was a game, as we said early on, the Rockets were not flashy for the full 48 minutes. It took some grit. It took some grinding to stay within striking distance until eventually the rust started to be knocked off for James, for Chris, certainly for Clint. And I thought the bench was enormous tonight, even if the overall percentages, I know Ryan and Luke ended up being a combined 2 of 10. Despite that, they were plus 13, plus 11, and on the balance of their performance, I thought was pretty good. Ryan, in his 20 minutes, actually had 6 rebounds, which, again, if you're limiting his minutes, bringing him off the bench, also against probably lesser defenders, it maybe also free him up to be more energetic on the glass. And one game sample size, but that could potentially be another benefit of bringing Ryan off the bench in that second unit role. But I thought they played well. Joe Johnson was phenomenal. And folks, let's just be honest. Joe Johnson, 22 minutes to Gerald Green, 6. I think it's pretty clear already that Joe has more trust for Mike D'Antoni than Gerald Green. And I think it's just because, as one of my great followers pointed out, Joe Johnson's almost like a Swiss Army knife because he can do so many different things as opposed to Gerald Green, who can be electric as a shooter when he gets it going, but you just don't have the overall diversity of skill sets. With Joe, everything from his shooting to his passing to his isolation, even had some positive plays defensively as well. Look at when he pulled the chair on Taj Gibson. Just Joe Johnson, even at 36 years old, he's just such a smart player. He gives you so many dimensions, and I think he's already somewhat ahead of Gerald Green. I think you could see that tonight. And what's important to note about the bench, you know, we mentioned that the bench players, they all had plus-minus in the positive, and the four guys that played substantial minutes, 16 or more, were all plus-9 or better. We didn't even mention Eric Gordon. And that's because Eric Gordon missed tonight sick. You don't need to worry. It's not the back. It's not the knee. He just had an illness. That stuff happens. But, folks, even on a night when the reigning sixth man of the year was not available, the Rockets bench still took over this game. And even on a night with the reigning sixth man of the year not playing, Mike D'Antoni still used a 10-man rotation. That's how deep this team is. And of the 10-man rotation, it's not like you had just courtesy minutes other than maybe the six in the first half for Gerald Green. You had, again, five players off the bench. Four of them had at least 16 minutes. And of those besides Nene, I exclude Nene because he's limited to one position. Your guys that have more versatility, Ryan, Luke, and Joe, all played at least 20 minutes. So it's a nice show, again, one game sample, but it's a nice show of faith by Mike D'Antoni trusting his bench more than he has in the past. And I also think it's a great side that the bench was able to reward him with that level of play, even without Eric Gordon. Because folks, Brandon Wright didn't even get in the game. I had some folks asking, well, Brandon Wright's been through some practices. Can he get on the court? And certainly when we talked to him before the break, he wanted to be on the court, and there just wasn't a place for him. Because again, Clint played so well, and then Nene tonight, 7 points, 3 rebounds, made both of his shots, plus 14 in his 16 minutes. This was a game against a Minnesota team, Karl-Anthony Towns, that tends to play a little slower, a little more traditional. We know the way that Tom Thibodeau typically runs his sets. And folks, a rested Nene over the past couple of years has been a good Nene. So if you want to buy into the narrative that Nene is going to round into form in the playoffs, especially when there's no back-to-backs, you have extra time off in between games a lot of the time, et cetera, then you would like Nene to show up in a high-profile matchup like this on national TV after having 8 days off, essentially not playing for 9 days when you factor in the game times. And folks, that's exactly what happened. So Brandon Wright, who was acquired and the Rockets think was a coup to get, he was not even able to get in this game, even in a game that the Rockets did not have Eric Gordon available. And of course, I know that these are two wildly different positions. Eric is a guard and Brandon is a big, but certainly you have some flexibility from the other spots. The point is, when you are able to play 10 players, even without Eric Gordon, and of your bench guys, four of them play 16 minutes or more, three of them play 20 minutes or more, and this is all with Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Clint Capela, Chris Paul, James Harden. All five of your starters played at least 26 minutes. Three of them played at least 32 minutes. Then, boy, that speaks to the depth that you have off of that. And I'll even mention Trevor Ariza because it was an under-the-radar quality game for him. Played just 26 minutes coming off the two-week absence with a hamstring strain. Not as severe as James Harden's, but they kept Ariza out a little longer, partially because he's 32 years old, also partially because it blended into the All-Star break. But Trevor tonight, his first game off the shelf, I said going into the game, you want to watch those guys that had minor nicks going into the All-Star break. Ariza with his hamstring, Chris Paul with his hand, Eric Gordon with his knee and his back. We didn't get to see Gordon because of the illness, but Ariza and Paul, folks, they look like the rest of them are rolled a good, and Ariza in particular, 4 of 8, 50% from the field, 3 of 6 from 3, 50% there, 11 points, 5 rebounds. He looked ready to go. The hamstring did not limit him at all. Rockets took advantage of the break to get him the extra time that he needed. But maybe more importantly than that, he only played 26 minutes. And perhaps that's the key to unlocking a more consistent version of Trevor as a shooter. Now, in the balance of the season, of course, he's 38%, which is still very, very good from behind the arc. But there's a lot of streakiness over the years that comes with Trevor. And a lot of it comes with the mileage. Mike D'Antoni feeling like he has to play him 40-plus minutes a night, especially in matchups against quality teams, which Minnesota is. So maybe another trickle-down effect of the bench is you're able to keep Trevor Ariza only 26 minutes. Because I don't think Trevor was limited by the hamstring. I don't think it was a matter of them not trusting him. Because, folks, it was a grade one hamstring, and he's had over 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks. I don't think that they were that worried about Trevor from the standpoint of managing his hamstring. I think it's just when you have Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, Joe Johnson, Gerald Green, all those options, and that's not even with Eric Gordon. You don't have to play Trevor Ariza, so many minutes. And the hope long-term is that when you don't have to play Trevor Ariza 40 minutes, maybe that's the key to having a more consistent shooting version of Trevor Ariza. It's one game. It's not anything that you can write home about or assume based on a sample size this small, but it's something to monitor. If you're able to keep Trevor Ariza in the upper 20s rather than the upper 30s in minutes per game, does that keep his legs more underneath him for his shots to where you more consistently get the elite shooting version of Trevor Ariza? Again, small sample size, but so far so good, and it all translates into that bench play, which even if the shooting was not always there for the Rockets in terms of overall just certainly plus minus energy, and then the way they were able to kind of manage the minutes for the starters, nobody played more than 34 minutes, and that was James Harden, then folks, yeah, a lot of it goes back to having a 10-man rotation, and yeah, it speaks to the work that Daryl Morey's done putting the roster together, and also it speaks to Mike D'Antoni being willing to play that rotation after getting this additional depth in the form of Joe Johnson, Cheryl Green, Brandon Wright. A lot of people wondered if Mike would play it. Well, so far, so good. Now, for the last segment of our 3 points recap, I want to discuss a couple of odds and ends that we haven't discussed yet. First, Clint Capella, we mentioned earlier, 25-11. One thing I should have pointed out, besides just that, Clint led the way for the Rockets with 11 rebounds. Second was Chris Paul with 10. Rockets actually out-rebounded Minnesota 50-42. And that's pretty impressive when you consider that Minnesota is a big team. Karl-Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler. There's a lot of length. You also have Taj Gibson. Not exactly a great rebounder, but a very physical presence. There's a lot of size off the bench as well. This is the game for the Rockets, led by Chris Paul and James Harden, to actually not just hold their own, but out-rebound Minnesota. Boy, that shows you the evolution of Clint Capella in the middle, and it also shows you what a rested Chris Paul can do. Because if you have a rested version of Chris, as he was extra springy tonight, I thought, after the layoff, maybe a little rusty with a shot early on, but his lift seemed to be there, then Chris can be a dynamic rebounder as well at times. And that's another thing to look forward to in the playoffs. As we mentioned with Nene, you can say the same thing with a 32-year-old Chris Paul, being able to unlock the elite version of him on a more regular basis. I want to transfer from an overall rebounding discussion to the starters and where that may play into it, because there was a debate going into tonight. Who do you start at power forward? Because the last couple of weeks, in the absence of Trevor Ariza, it's been Luke Bamute and PJ Tucker at the 3 and 4. Well, now Ariza's back. He gets his customary spot as the starting small forward back. And so there's questions. Do you start Luke? Do you start PJ? Do you bump back Ryan Anderson to where he's been most of this season and most of his two seasons with the Rockets? And they ended up sticking with PJ Tucker, which I sort of expected. And PJ, even though he's undersized, did have 5 rebounds in his 28 minutes. He's surprisingly strong. We all know PJ's game, even though he's not a dynamic rebounder, he's certainly physical enough that he can at least do the fundamentals and box out his man and at least leave the lane open for Clint Capella to hopefully do what he does on the glass, where he just does a tremendous job on the season when you look at Clint averaging over 11 rebounds per game despite only playing about 27 minutes per night. So PJ, even though he's not a dynamic rebounder, he can help you in that regard. And in some ways, because of his flexibility, he might even be a better rebounder than the taller Ryan Anderson, who just doesn't nearly have the versatility defensively, ability to make plays in space. And sometimes that hurts you on those long rebounds. But the interesting thing, the Rockets, they could have gone a number of ways. Because you could have gone back with Ryan, who gives you the peak spacing. You could have gone with Luke Bamute, who I think of the three is clearly the most valuable player. But they went with PJ, and again, PJ had been starting lately, but so had Luke, so I don't think it would have been a huge transition to bump Luke up. If you heard yesterday's episode with Karthik Prasad, Stanford KP on Twitter, he made the case for Luke. Eventually, they could experiment more, but what we heard before again from Mike D'Antoni is he likes the combination of Trevor Ariza and PJ Tucker and Luke Bamute and Ryan Anderson. And I started thinking about that, and it makes sense because of the concept of diversifying your elite wing defense. It's a kind of a similar concept to Chris Paul and James Harden, how you want to have an elite point guard out there for all 48 minutes, how they stagger those minutes some. Maybe you want to have an elite defender out there all 48 minutes, and maybe that's more possible if you stagger Ariza and Bamute. Now, I know Ariza has not always been an elite defender this year, but I think the hope is that when the games get bigger, and especially if you're able to manage his minutes the way you were tonight, you can also unlock a fresher version of Trevor on the defensive end as well, in addition to a more efficient shooter, as we discussed earlier. But the bottom line is, Bamute and Ariza, maybe it's too much to say that you have 48 minutes of elite wing defense, but let's just say you have 48 minutes of highly skilled wing defense. And hopefully with Ariza, again, managing his minutes, you get him more fresh and more engaged moving forward on both ends of the court. But the bottom line is, you have Luke off the bench, then if you play Luke with Ryan in that second unit, because Luke might be the most versatile of all, then you actually offset the deficiencies of Ryan on the defensive end even more. So I think that might be the calculus for Mike D'Antoni. And with Ariza and P.J. Tucker, the flip side is that you wonder, well, is P.J. a good enough shooter? Now, he's been better of late. P.J. tonight actually was 3 of 5 from behind the arc, 4 of 7 overall, 11 points, 5 rebounds in his 28 minutes. But there have been times this year when P.J. has slumped from the field. And so perhaps if you have Ariza out there in the starting lineup with him, again, 38% from the year from 3, and you're hoping perhaps even better now that you're able to more regularly monitor his minutes. And now off the bench, we know what Ryan's defensive deficiencies are. We've made the case plenty of times before about why he's better suited off the bench, not having to guard the opposing team's best big men. But now maybe if you have Luke's extreme versatility, you offset Ryan's defensive limitations a little bit. And the flip side, by playing Ariza and Tucker, is that if Tucker has a weakness, it's the inconsistent shot. But with Ariza, over 38% from 3 and 50% tonight, then maybe that's a better combination than Luke and PJ off the bench, because Luke, while not a bad shooter, is not as good as Ariza is. So I think what you're seeing from Mike D'Antoni, and it's subject to change, but when you think about it, it makes sense. You're seeing an emphasis on mitigating the weaknesses, to where with Luke and Ryan, each complements the other. With Luke, you have the extreme defensive versatility. And the flip side, if Luke has a weakness, he's not an elite shooter, well, that's what Ryan is. So they play well together. And the flip side with Trevor and PJ, of course, is that, well, if PJ is going to be your 4, you might need your 3 to be a little bit more of a consistent shooter than Luke is. Well, that's where Ariza comes into play. So what we're seeing early on, it's less about maximizing anyone's skill, and it's more about that same philosophy that we've seen with James Harden and Chris Paul, which is that over the balance of 48 minutes, try to have as much diversity out there as you can, so that you have at least some of those skills out there for all 48 minutes. You're seeing more focus on how guys play together. And we'll see if it lasts. It's possible that when Eric Gordon gets back, Eric, if he starts shooting well again, he can be a 30 minutes per game player. And then if that's the case, then he's going to steal some minutes at the 3 spot. And certainly that could have an effect on both Luke and Trevor. It could also have an effect on Joe Johnson, who, again, tonight, Joe was great, 10 points, 4 of 6 shooting, as we mentioned, a Swiss Army knife, already seems to be ahead of Gerald Green in Mike D'Antoni's trust factor. When Eric comes back, he could sort of have an effect, because Joe actually played a decent amount of minutes at the 2 tonight, or I guess you could say Trevor did as well, because you didn't really have a third guard after Chris Paul and James Harden. So we'll have to see what happens when Eric comes back. You could see these tweaked a little bit. But in general, I think what you're seeing is an emphasis on complementary styles and mitigating the weaknesses, who plays well together. And it's a long way to go. We've heard in the past that D'Antoni's going to experiment. I fully expect that. But so far, on the surface, it makes sense, and so far so good in terms of the results, because Ariza and PJ seem to flow well together in the starting lineup. Shot a combined 8 of 15 from the field, 22 points, 10 rebounds. You'll take that any day of the week from those two in 27 minutes average per game between them. Ariza at 26, Tucker at 28, and then off the bench, Ryan and Luke, again, did not shoot particularly well, 2 of 10, but when you look at Ryan plus 13 in his 20 minutes, Luke Bamute plus 11 in his 24, even if the shots were not falling, the energy was there enough to where they were positive difference makers. And again, it's one game. It's going to be a tougher stretch for 7 games now for the Rockets, but so far, so good. And again, when you're facing a Minnesota team that's entered the game 36-25, number 4 in the West, effectively tied for 3rd, I think you will take that result in a heartbeat if you're the Rockets, to get some wind at your back before going out on next week's tough road trip, starting Sunday in Denver and then culminating Utah, tough back-to-back on Monday night, and then the Clippers on Wednesday night in Los Angeles. So until that Sunday game in Denver, I think we will break things here. As always, thanks to you guys, our loyal listeners, for tuning in. If you want more regular coverage, you can do so on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose, BENDUBOSE. The show is at Locked On Rockets, also LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, or LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. The latter is our email address. Those are all ways you can interact with us. Questions about the team, suggestions for the show, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, if you are not subscribed to us already, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, any of our outlets, just subscribe to us. Also, leave us a 5-star review if you can. Having a healthy subscriber list and also having as close to a 5-star review as possible, that's how we remain financially viable to advertise or able to bring this and remain able to bring this to you as frequently as we do, the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. So for now, folks, I hope you guys enjoy your weekends. We'll be talking again Sunday when the Rockets take on the Nuggets in the Mile High City. Until then, folks, again, enjoy your weekend and the happy final from Friday evening. Rockets 120, Timberwolves 102. Rockets now won 11 games in a row, still in the number one seed in the Western Conference ahead of the Golden State Warriors, now 45-13 on the year. So, folks, how sweet it is. On that positive note, go out and enjoy your weekends, and we'll be talking again Sunday when the Rockets take on the Nuggets from Denver.